WFM with Green Farm. Being up to 90 isn't real. The protein in our range is. Get real.
Thanks to Laura Fox for an unforgettable 3 weeks. It's Friday the 18th of February and this is Game On. Coming up today, we've round the grounds in the League of Ireland as the SSE Airtricity Premier Division kicks off with plenty of talking points.
I didn't know it was going to be this mental. Again, you can do all the coaching licences you want, the pro, obviously the top one, nothing can teach you. So listen, I am doing it now. The club, a lot of people rely on you. Everyone's problems is your problems, but since I was a kid, I've always liked helping people. So, listen, at the end of the day, you're a manager, yeah, you're coaching, but you are helping people. So, I like that. That's who I am. And I guess I just like the responsibility.
We'll have Alan Cawley on that and the Premier League weekend and the Irish women's team in Pinatar Cup action. Meanwhile, in Gaelic football, Austin O'Malley and Neil Ewing are with us as Dublin welcome a Mayo side that they need revenge on.
And Mayo have done it. It's over. Beaten Dublin. They've taken the biggest scalp of all with a young team. Dublin's 45 match unbeaten run is over.
Plus, it wouldn't be Friday without Jane Mangan setting us up for the weekend's racing. If you want to get in touch, you can text us on 51552 or tweet at GameOn2FM.
Game On on 2FM.
Now, welcome along. I am delighted to say that Austin O'Malley and Alan Cawley are with me in studio. Alan, we are going to get stuck into the football. Just before we came on air, it was announced that Dublin City Council say it will examine a proposal from Shelburne to redevelop Tolka Park into a multi-sport stadium. So the club has met with officials to discuss a proposal to purchase the stadium. Shelburne, as we know, ceded its interest in Tolka Park in 2016 as part of an agreement to relocate to a redeveloped Dailymount Park as co-anchor tenant with Bose. The council has said that they expect to receive more details on Shell's proposal within the next fortnight, after which due diligence will be carried out. They say they remain committed to the Dailymount project, but this definitely opens up the door now for the Save Tolka Park program and for Shelburne to redevelop it into something that they definitely want.
Yeah, I think it's good news, Marie, certainly for the campaign. Obviously, we know this has been ongoing for the last number of months, but coming off the back of such a positive week for Shelburne as well, the league starting, obviously Damien Duff, all the interest, they've been in the news all week and for the last couple of weeks, and I think this is just great news for everybody involved, because I know people are very keen to obviously hold on to Tolka Park and redevelop it if they can. So I think this is great news if there's any possibility whatsoever that they can buy it back from Dublin City Council, which is what they're bidding to do, or what the proposal is. And as I say, there'll be a decision made in 2 or 3 weeks. But I think anyone involved with Irish football would love to see Tolka Park remain. Like, the history, Damien Duff spoke about it, but you don't need Damien Duff to speak about it. Everybody knows the history involved with Tolka Park over the years, myself included, and even going back long before that, Marie. And you just always associate it with Irish football. So it would be such a shame if we were to lose Tolka Park, especially I think when we're hitting a period now in Irish football where it's almost like we've hit rock bottom and we're building and we're looking to the future and trying to get everything back up and running. And there's a lot of positivity around that. Obviously, there's so much work to be done. So I think we need a proper Tolka Park redeveloped if we're to obviously fulfil our ambition of what we're trying to do with Irish football. So I think it's good news for everybody involved. It comes just 2 hours before kickoff tonight. They're expecting a sellout crowd, obviously, in Tolka Park. Mm-hmm. I'm heading there straight after this, Marie. You can see with the smile on my face, Friday nights are back, Marie. I'm back. And I'm so looking forward to it, Jack. And I think it's another good news story off the back of so much positivity around at the moment with the league.
Yeah, and I think you're bang on, Alan, when you're talking about the history and the tradition, and when we're trying to build things back up again for football in this country, and a lot of other associations and different sports would just love to have that tradition, that they can just build on that. They don't have to create anything new. It's there. It's embedded within Irish football. Everybody knows it. And all they need to do is to find a way to get it back on track, and you have something really special at your fingertips.
Absolutely, because you can't buy that, Marie. That history, you just can't buy it. And the shell of the stadium is there. All it needs is obviously a plan and a structure in place in terms of, and obviously money and investment. But to redevelop it, I don't think it would take an awful lot, really. Plus the fact that the good news as well for Bose and Dailymount, obviously that project is not going to be affected by this either, because we all know the plans that were in place were there and they were on hold, obviously, with the pandemic. But they're firmly in place now to go ahead as well. And wouldn't it be brilliant to have two stadiums side by side over that side of the city? Because you look at Bohemians as well at the moment, and I know Shelburne are very much in the headlines and there's a lot of positivity around them, but Bohemians are bringing, I think, 600-700 fans to the showgrounds tomorrow night, Sligo Rovers. Season tickets at an all-time high. The interest in Bohemians as well and the brilliant work that they've done in the Phibsborough community, Marie, has been absolutely phenomenal. And just the shame and the pity at the moment is the fact that they don't have a big enough stadium to cater for all the fans that they would have. Like, you're talking about 3,000 or 4,000 season ticket holders, whereas I think at the moment, if Dalymount could hold 7,000-8,000, they'd sell out. They really would. The interest is that big at the moment in Bohemians especially, and in the league in general as well. I think there's going to be 5,000 in Tala tonight. There'll be another 3,500 in the showgrounds tomorrow night. Finn Harps, we're expecting a bumper crowd tonight for their game. It's a pity that that's called off as well. Dundalk and obviously Derry as well will have a big crowd. So there's so much interest around at the moment, like I've never seen before, Marie. There's all eyes are on the league. It's just a pity Eunice got involved and obviously he kind of scuppered things, especially for Finn Harps. But hopefully all the games, I said, will go ahead tonight and the weather won't affect them too much, because people tuning in tonight to the game in Talca Park, you'd hate to think that the weather would affect it. And if it's really windy and blustery, that will affect the game. You don't mind a bit of rain, the players won't mind that either, but if it's windy, and that's when the game can become farcical. And I'd hate to think people would judge it off the back of that. If anyone who hasn't gone to a game, or you're reading from the outside about the interest in Damien Duff involved and all these stories, just go to a game, honestly. And if you don't like it, so be it. But believe me, if you go to a game, there's every chance you'll fall in love with it, Marie.
Yeah, because there's football there, but it's a bit of a cultural experience at times as well. And you mentioned Bose there and what they've managed to do. They've tapped into a whole different market when it comes to fans, and they're bringing an awful lot more than just football. As you said, they're so active in the community. They're bringing people along on a journey with them, really, which is pretty remarkable. But we can't really move on from Talca and Shells without mentioning your league win with them.
That was many moons ago, Marie, but yeah, I'll hold on to those memories fondly. And that was a great time, and obviously the team that we had assembled, and that was around the time of the European run as well. So, like, you're talking about history with Shelburne, and it goes far before the team that I was involved in. But all through the years, and Shelburne were so successful in winning league titles and winning cups. Wouldn't it be brilliant to see Damien Duff bring those glory days back? There's a lot of hard work ahead of him, and he'd be under no illusions whatsoever in terms of the work that entails. He's already spoke about it this week, just about management in general. It's opened his eyes, Marie, and when you think of the experiences he's had it as a player, but management does a whole different kettle of fish altogether. So it is, there's, as I say, like, and this isn't blind optimism on my part either, Marie. We all know there's problems in Irish football. We've spoken about them over and over many, many times. But I do feel we're at a point where things are beginning to turn, and people are rowing in behind it. There's a lot of good people involved and a lot of positive projects going on all over the country as well. There's a big project going on in the showgrounds in Sligo as well, developing the stadium in the ground with the help of government investment as well, and that's what we need. So there's a lot of positivity around, Marie. Hopefully the football delivers, because that's the most important part of it all, and the most important ingredient is the football on the pitch. And the football is very good, and if people realise that you're going out looking at young lads playing tonight around the country, a lot of these lads will make up a large chunk of the international squad what's to follow in years to come, because of Brexit, and obviously we all know that players are not going away now younger, that they're going to have to come through the underage system and eventually maybe make their way. And look, the good ones will always move on. There's no problem with that whatsoever. But if we have an industry where we can bring players through, develop our own players, go on then and play, as I say, 50-100 games in this league, and go off over to England then, like what we've seen with so many of them, and eventually play in the Irish team, good luck to them all.
Absolutely. Well, Tony O'Donoghue is at Talca Park for that Shelburne St. Patrick's Athletic game for us.
A sellout crowd at Talca Park, and the nation will be tuning in as well to watch the managerial debut of Damien Duff. The Republic of Ireland centurion and two-time Premier League winner takes charge of newly promoted Shelburne, and despite his illustrious playing career, Duff claims this is the most nervous football moment of his life. He's made big changes at Shells already, with a radical overhaul of the squad. His intention is for Shells to play an attractive brand of football. Hopefully the wind won't scupper those plans. St. Pat's have a new boss too in Tim Clancy, who arrived from Drogheda, and there's quite a different look to their squad from the one that finished second in the league last season and won the FAI Cup in a penalty shootout. Penalties decided the President's Cup last Friday too, as Pats failed to lift the first trophy of the new season, that honour going to champion Shamrock Rovers. However, the performance of new signing Owen Doyle, who scored the Saints' goal in Tala, showed that the ex-Bolton Wanderer striker has hit the ground running and will be a major player in the race for the title.
That was Tony O'Donoghue, and at Oriel Park for Dundalk versus Derry City is Adrian Eames.
The crowds gathering for this one, always a great sense of excitement at the start of a new season. Derry bringing a large travelling support here tonight. They've got some financial muscle behind them, of course, so there's going to be a lot of interest to see what Derry can achieve. And of course, they swooped into Oriel to sign a couple of their old boys, Patrick McElhenney and Michael Duffy. And they've been joined from Dundalk by Will Patching and Cameron Dummigan. That adds to the plot here tonight. So can Derry push for the title? Well, you'd expect them to be in the mix. And what about the home side? Well, it perhaps suits new Dundalk manager Stephen O'Donnell that very few are talking about the Lady Whites challenging for the crown. There's a lot of new players at the club, and O'Donnell, who raised eyebrows by leaving St Pat's after guiding them to the FAI Cup, will perhaps feel that patience will be required. Of course, he's taken a few of the Pats boys from last year with him to Dundalk. I see them as possible dark horses. The home crowd here is always a big plus for Dundalk. O'Donnell and his opposite number tonight, Rory Higgins, shared a house while playing together here at Dundalk. Old friends, but not tonight. Kick-off at Oriel Park is at 7.45.
I love all those connections, Alan, because there are so many of them. The league is small, and when players move around, and now there's so many young managers who have played together, it just adds to it, doesn't it?
Not only did they share a house, Marie, they shared a bed. They topped and tailed. That's the
true
story. Stephen O'Donnell and Rory Higgins topped and tailed in the bed for, I think, the guts of 6 months over a season anyway. And the boys, I've spoken to the lads about this, and they used to stay up till all hours, they were football mad. And the two of them, they'd be up till all hours just chatting football. And here's the two of them now managing in the league, which is absolutely fantastic, going against each other tonight. But two very good friends, but two very good up and coming managers as well, Marie. As you say, Stephen O'Donnell, it was a surprise, as Adrian mentioned in his report, that he left St Pat's after them winning the cup and finishing second. He has that emotional connection with Dundalk where he was so successful, and maybe he felt he just wanted to bring the good times back there because of all the turmoil over the last couple of seasons. But he has a big, big job on his hands. I actually thought he was mad to leave, and I've told him this, Marie, but again, who are we to tell him what he can't decide, especially when he has that connection with him? So it's a big job on his hands. He went into a rebuilding job with St Pat's and made a very good fist of that. I felt he was on the cusp of something really, really good with them had he stayed, but now he's gone into an even bigger rebuilding job with Dundalk. So as Adrian also mentioned, there's not much talk about them in terms of maybe challenging or winning a league. I think if he can just consolidate his position, maybe challenge for Europe and build for next season, I think Stephen will be happy with that. Whereas Rory Higgins, on the other hand, with Derry City, there's huge expectation on them now, Marie, because of course they've increased the budget. There is financial muscle behind them, obviously, with the owner Philip O'Doherty. They've brought in some really, really big signings in Patrick McElhenney, Michael Duffy from Dundalk, Will Patching as well, Cameron Dummigan, Irish under 21 goalkeeper Brian Maher, Brandon Kavanagh, a huge potential in that young fella as well. So there's a lot of expectation on Derry. I don't think Rory will be under any illusions in terms of what he has to deliver this year. Can he push Shamrock Rovers? I think they can. I think they'll be the nearest challengers. Whether they'll win the league, I'm not so sure, Marie. Shamrock Rovers are the favourites, and rightly so, but I think Derry will push them all the way this year.
Well, Shamrock Rovers are taking on UCD at Talla tonight, and John Kenny is there for us.
This fixture was in danger of being played behind closed doors due to the letting off of fireworks by Rovers supporters in Waterford. Instead, a fine was imposed, and the champions will face newly promoted UCD in front of a decent crowd tonight. Their main aim this season, though, is one of survival, while Rovers are sure to be in the mix for the title race once again. Jack Byrne is back at the hoops after his spell in Cyprus, while Andy Lyons has joined from Bowes, while UCD, the selling club, have held on to many of their players that gained promotion. But Rovers legend Andy Myler knows this is the toughest of starts for his UCD side. The last time Rovers played UCD was back in 2019, with Stephen Bradley's side winning 3-0, while UCD's last win against the hoops came back in 2013, and they are massive underdogs ahead of tonight's fixture at a breezy, stormy Talla, and it kicks off at 8 o'clock.
Alan, they are massive underdogs, UCD, but still, you know, a night like tonight, you'd never really know what they can bring.
Yeah, because if you think back to last Friday, Marie, in the President's Cup, Shamrock Rovers weren't that impressive. Now, I know people would say, look, it's a glorified friendly, and but Stephen Bradley and his team were certainly taking it serious. I felt St Pat's were the better team on the night, and Andy Myler was sitting in front of me. He was up watching the match, so I'm sure he would have taken hope from that, but he knows an awful lot needs to go their way. You'd need Shamrock Rovers to have an off night, Marie, and then everything to fall into place for UCD if they were to get a result. As you said, they're huge underdogs, but they do have Colm Whelan, an under 21 international who scored a bucketful of goals last season in Division 1, and of Liam Kerrigan, probably one of the most exciting young players in the country as well. A lot depends on them and how long they can hold on to them for, because they're going to finish out their degree, but I think come the summer they may move on, both of those players. If they were able to hold on to them for the course of the season, I'd give them a chance of possibly staying up. But tonight, their season won't be defined by the games against Shamrock Rovers and the likes of Derry. Their games will be defined when they play Finn Harps and Drogheda and the teams that are going to be down around them. So I think Andy Myler, it's a shot to nothing really. Them lads can go up to Tallaght, the home of the champions, in front of a huge crowd, a bit of a shot to nothing, and have a go at it. And as I say, if chances fall their way, I'd fancy Colm Whelan to maybe stick one away, but you would have to fancy Shamrock Rovers. And of course, Jack is back. I watched him last week. It took him a while to get going, but once he got into his groove in the second half, he's going to be a massive player for them as well, Marie. And they are the favourites, and rightly so. I think they're going to take all the beating Shamrock Rovers.
I was actually thinking, oh, maybe I won't go because the weather's so bad. And then you say Jack is back, and like, that's all you want. He's box office. It's like a tiny little card. Jack Byrne is going to be out there, and any opportunity to go and watch him play in the flesh is well worth braving the elements for anyway.
Absolutely, Marie. Like, you'd have to go, as you said. It's on your way home, is it?
It is on my way home.
You've no excuses.
I'll just click the lads out.
If you text me at 8 o'clock and say you went home and put the slippers on, I'd be disappointed. No, you would have to go and watch, as you said. There'd be a huge crowd as well. I think they're expecting 5,000. So, and Jack is absolutely fantastic. I know things didn't work out for him, obviously, when he went away to Cyprus, but he's back. He's happy. He's smiling again. Back with his mum, Jackie, who we all know. She's become famous as well. And he's a brilliant, brilliant player, Marie. I'd love to see him get back to the level of when he was initially with Shamrock Rovers, and I'm sure he has aspirations with Stephen Kenny, was at the match last week, to break into that squad again. He certainly didn't look out of place when he was in it previously under Mick McCarthy. So I'm a huge fan of Jack. I think he's a brilliant player, and again, no more than Duff and Owen Doyle or any other people around the league that you'd be happy to go out and watch, Jack Byrne is a must watch.
Absolutely. Okay, we're going to take a very quick break, but do stay with us, because after it we will be chatting Gaelic football with Austin O'Malley and Neil Ewing, and asking the question, can Mayo inflict a third loss on Dublin? Welcome back to Game On with me, Marie Crowe. It is 22 minutes past six now, and we are turning our attention to Gaelic football. Austin O'Malley is with me live in studio, and Neil Ewing, former Sligo player, is on the line. We are going to start with Dublin Mayo, as expected. And Austin, going into a game like this, you know, before we would nearly always have started talking about Mayo and what they need to do and just how they were going to tackle Dublin. But now we're looking at it in a completely different lens because of everything that has happened in this season so far. And the question that is on everyone's lips is, can Dublin stop the rot?
Yeah, look, it's a huge game for Dublin. Like, I mean, we cannot probably remember the last time Dublin lost three games on the bounce. So, like, they really need to come, and they really need to be at this from the get-go. Like, and you've Mayo probably coming up the info really smelling blood and knowing that they're a little bit on their knees and looking for that knockout punch. So from a Dublin perspective, I think it's key that they get a good start and try and build a little bit of confidence and momentum. They have been out of sorts definitely over the last two games, and they've looked disjointed in a lot of different areas, particularly at the back. That they've been leaking heavy as well, and they've been pulled all over the place, and just an absence of leadership across the field, you would say, you know. So he has obviously a big job in his hands. He's trying to bed in new talent. That takes time. It doesn't happen overnight. And, you know, from the perspective of probably trying to get some of their other big players back and up to speed again as well. So, I mean, you know, still you wouldn't discount the fact that they could come and turn Mayo over there, you know, particularly, you know, when you look at, given the context of how Mayo took them out last year, it's all building really nicely towards the weekend.
You know, I would have thought the same when they were going down to play Kerry. I would have had the same thoughts, that there is quite a big chance that Dublin will come down and turn it on, and, you know, we'll see them reverting back to what we know and associate with them. But they weren't able to do that. Neil, just from your point of view, when you think of Croke Park as well, and as Austie said there, that, you know, Dublin just struggled at times with getting turned over, and the wide open spaces that are going to be there in Croke Park as well, you'd have to think that this time round it's going to be suiting Mayo.
Yeah, possibly. I think, again, just that little bit of perception is building around Dublin. You know, there was that aura of invincibility, which is now shattered, really. Mayo will definitely be heading up the N4 with a bit more optimism than they probably have for this game in recent years, especially they have Oisin Mullen back in. That's going to be a huge boost. Obviously, they had the huge boost of him staying on, not going to Australia, but to come back in for this game in Dublin is going to give them a big lift. But yeah, I don't think the Dubs are going to fear getting back into Croke Park. I think, you know, over the last few seasons, we've seen Mayo go to Croke Park for this league game, and you know, it's probably fizzled out on many of those occasions into a bit of a nothing affair with Dublin kind of pulling away. So, you know, Dublin definitely won't have a problem getting back into Croke Park. And I think the big thing for Dublin is going to be the 15 to take the field. I think you know, we've seen the game down in Tralee. They had named the team with some of their big names back in when the ball was thrown in. Those guys weren't on the pitch, so it's going to be very interesting to see what Dublin 15 are on the Croke Park pitch thrown at 7:30 tomorrow evening.
Yeah, and it's also quite un-Dublin-like to be thinking as well, Austie, that we're waiting for them to get better. We're waiting for players to return for them to get better. Before, they were always good because they had that depth, but now they're in the situation where they need those big-name players to come back. We don't have a Dublin team yet, but we do have a Mayo team, and as you mentioned, Oisin Mullen is back in, and you know, we're talking about Jack Byrne and players being back box office. He's somebody worth definitely tuning in for, but they also have Matty Ruan named to start. Jack Kearney's in at wing forward. Paul Towie, and then Rory Brickenden and Duncan McHugh replace Padraig O'Hara and Paddy Durkin in defence. So quite a lot of names there that we hadn't seen so far, and that brings pressure as well.
It does, yeah. Like Mayo, what they've named there, they have seven changes from the game against Monaghan. It'll be very interesting to see. There's a couple of young guys getting a chance there tomorrow evening. Jack Kearney, like, who has been prolific with his club throughout their All-Ireland Junior winning campaign. And you've young Towie from Charlestown coming into the corner there as well. And even Donny McHugh at wing back, you know, he got a spin against Donegal, got a half, struggled a little bit. So there's a lot of pressure on these guys as well. But brilliant to see Oisin Mullen back in there. And of course, Matty Ruan, who had a stellar year last year up to probably the All-Ireland final, where he maybe underperformed and so on. But come back, I suppose, to your initial point about Dublin, the lack of strength and depth really is probably what's catching them. And the guys that they are trying to bid in, you know, you don't have the same quality and calibre of guys around them that you had in prior seasons when Jim Gavin was bidding in one or two. So it was a different type of process. This is a process that I suppose has been coming for Dublin for a couple of years now, and somebody has to take that project on, and it's in Desi's hands at the moment, you know, but it's going to need time.
We're giving James Horan and Mayo a lot of credit, Neil, for managing the Mayo transition and been able to cope with the exodus of the big name players and replace them and bed in the new players coming along. So if we're giving James Horan the credit, whose fault is it in Dublin that they haven't managed the transition better? Is it Jim Gavin for not bringing them through at the time, or Desi for not doing what James Horan's done?
Yeah, I don't know. I think it's maybe a little bit early to be apportioning blame to anybody on that. And, you know, I think
that's no fun though, Neil. We have to apportion blame. That's what makes good
somewhere.
Radio here.
Neil, you won't last in this.
Come on, Neil. Yeah. You jump, get off the fence.
Yeah. it's not to sit on the fence, but I suppose the point that I was going to lead on to is that, you know, we have heard so much, you know, over the last number of years on the culture within this Dublin squad. You know, how strong that culture was, and you know, it's something I often think. I always thought about the Kilkenny Hurlers. Was the culture strong, or were they just a better team than everybody else? So I think you know, these few weeks are going to be a real test of the leaders within that Dublin team. You know, some of the older players around the group, your James McCarthy's, your Johnny Cooper's, Michael Fitzsimons, you know, can they maintain that culture within a new group, or, you know, grow that culture within a new group? And also Desi Farrell is going to have a huge part to play in that. You know, it became probably a cliche over the years around, you know, Jim Gavin talking about sticking to the process. Very easy to stick to the process when you're getting success and getting wins, and it's very easy to get players to buy into that. So I think for the senior players in that Dublin group and for Desi Farrell, it's going to be a huge challenge to see if guys are going to stick to the process now the results are going against them, if the culture within the group can stay really strong after, you know, a disappointing few weeks. And obviously last weekend was the break week in the league, and you know, sometimes when you've had two bad results, all you want to do is get back out on the pitch. But you know, in certain situations, maybe Dublin might have wanted to just get back, take a step back, get a decent spell of training done, you know, probably get four or five good sessions done in that 2 week period, and you know that might bring them up to the pace of the game tomorrow, back to where they need to be. So I think after they play Mayo tomorrow night, I think we're going to know a little bit more about this Dublin team. And you know, I think again, probably what surprised me in the game against Kerry was some of the simple mistakes that they made. You know, there was a 2v1 there at one stage in the first half. Hand pass just wasn't executed. It was those type of mistakes that really a Dublin team over the last few years wouldn't have made. So I'd probably be more worried about those mistakes creeping into their game than the results. But definitely going to be interesting tomorrow night to see if they can eradicate some of that and put Mayo to the pin in their collar in Croke Park.
Like, Austie, in fairness to Desi Farrell, he did say that everyone is looking towards the summer and that's when it matters and that's when it counts. But at the same time, if you're in Division 2 football, like, you're in a bit of trouble if you want to be going on winning All Ireland. So you do need to get results here in this time of year too.
You do. No, certainly, yeah. And I suppose that's the headache that every manager faces if you are trying to bait in talent, to try and balance that as well with having one eye on getting results, because it's a results-driven business. But I suppose if you looked at it from the other side of it, you know, Mayo went through the trapdoor year before last year down to Division 2 and still managed to, you know, come back straight up and navigate their way to an All-Ireland final. But, you know, you'd still think Dublin have enough of sort of horsepower around the place to probably wrestle 2, 3, 4 wins coming into the latter stages of the league and keep themselves up there. But definitely in terms of what Neil is saying there, the cultural piece is huge, that you know, when you have so many big players leaving a squad, all that kind of collective consciousness is gone, all of that sort of rhythm and synergy between guys, and that's often the thing that catches teams out when you're trying to build new, is that kind of telepathy has gone out of the group, and it takes a while for guys to sink in and get in rhythm and be in step with each other. So that's part of the process, and as I says, Desi needs time, and when you're growing and hothouse and talent, it takes time, and I think, you know, we need to be cognizant of that as well.
Yeah, and I guess look, a perfect example of that is Armagh and Kieran McGeaney and the time that he got and the way he was able to mould the players into the type of footballers that he wants. And we're now nearly three games we will be after this weekend into the league, and Armagh look like the real deal. They're playing Monaghan tomorrow in the Athletic Grounds at 5:30. Neil, do you think we're still going to see that same sort of attitude and approach against Monaghan, or do you think that now's the time for two wins in for Kieran McGeaney to maybe do a little bit of rotation and to understand that and be aware that the championship is coming around pretty quickly as well, and it's Ulster Football Championship too?
Yeah, Marie, I think that's an excellent point you made on the time that Kieran McGeaney has been given in Armagh. And I know Armagh were at Division 3 in 2017 and 2018. You know, they didn't get promoted in 2017. Tipperary caught them on the last day. But you could really see that Kieran McGeaney was building a strong group. There was buy-in from the players, and I think that's, again, not to harp back to Dublin, but you know, it's what's actually happening inside the group versus the noise outside the group. Differentiating between the two of those is very important. But yeah, Armagh, they probably never expected they'd be sitting on top of the table after playing the last two All-Ireland champions in their first two games. So you know, they're in a great position. Maybe the break has come at the break last again came at the wrong time for Armagh, but and the last thing they probably want is another Ulster derby after, well, what was a fairly tense affair with Tyrone. But it's a funny one, because Monaghan probably will have no fear of Armagh given games they've had with them over the last few years. And Monaghan are probably going to be looking at this game as a must-win for themselves if they're to have any chance of avoiding relegation, given the fixtures they have coming down the road. So, I have a feeling for Monaghan in this one. It's obviously, yeah, going to be a typical dogged Ulster affair. I just seen there this evening. There's another weather warning for Sunday, so you can imagine Armagh Monaghan in
Eunice Mark Two.
Yeah, in Eunice Mark Two. You know, from what I've seen, it's going to be very similar to Eunice. So, you know, that's going to make it even more of a battle up there. So.
Yeah, scores will be at a premium is what you're saying here. Yeah. So look, also we have, you know, talk about must win games there, Austin, and Tyrone against Kildare, and it does feel like for Tyrone that we need to start seeing a little bit more of what they were doing when they were winning the All-Ireland last year, as opposed to these early stages of the league when they're looking quite laboured, because again, time is going by quickly, and if you're not doing things right now, it's going to be hard to be doing them right in just a couple of months when it's championship time.
Yeah, absolutely, and I suppose they've had a number of guys leave the panel as well, so, you know, in terms of trying to bring in personnel and try to get people, you know, up to speed and come on, you know, it's always difficult obviously for a team coming off the back of winning an All-Ireland. You have, you know, the razzmatazz around that, lads maybe might have a little what you call a division of focus, and it's tricky to get guys back in and sync and that, so there's a challenge there definitely for Brian Duher and Fergal Logan. But even looking at that one this weekend, you'd nearly think there in Hillie Park that they'd probably just grind Kildare down and get it done in typical Tyrone fashion and get themselves 2 points, because when you look at the league there, like, you have three teams sitting on 1 point there, Monaghan, Kildare, Tyrone, so it's a massive week for all those teams to try and, you know, stockpile points to try and nose them or nudge themselves up the division. So I fancy Tyrone in Hillie Park again, probably, you know, will look to grind Kildare down, and it could, you know, it could be by a very, very slim margin.
Neil, I know you have to go soon. I'm just going to put one question to you, but before you do, just about Kildare and the opportunity that they will see this game as providing for them, just given the fact that Tyrone are missing four very important players.
Yeah, absolutely. They're four huge players for Tyrone to be missing. But probably for Kildare, they've had to travel up to Donegal for their last league game. Probably heading to Omagh is not where they want to be going on the back of that either. It's
certainly not.
No. I don't think it's going to be crucial for Kildare to stay in Division 1 this year. I think, you know, there's a huge enthusiasm in the county with the new management team. You know, there's not going to be any pressure on that management team if they were to go down. I think Kildare probably just, if they can get a solid bank of performances out of their games in Division 1 this year, head into the Leinster Championship ready to have a right crack at Dublin, that's going to be success for them. So I think they will struggle in Omagh this weekend, but again, it's just going to be about performances, I think, for Kildare over the next few games.
Okay, Neil, I'm going to let you go now. Thank you so much for joining us. But we are still going to continue our Gaelic football chat, because we also need to talk about Kerry and Donegal in Fitzgerald Stadium this weekend. Kerry, again, look, we're seeing good form from them. Donegal, a bit hit and miss. But we're talking a little bit about squad rotation, and, you know, there's been so much going on for the last couple of weeks with Sigerson and a lot of Kerry players involved. But at the same time, then, Donegal does probably offer an opportunity for Kerry to, they would see that as a chance to get a few more points on the board, Austin.
Completely, yeah. And at home at Fitzgerald Stadium, and again, you know, Jack O'Connor coming in, probably, you know, looking to knit this team together. So trying to get as much game time into guys and reps again to build that sort of, as I've said earlier, that telepathy among the group. I suppose you would maybe have one eye maybe on the likes of David Clifford and maybe managing his minutes this weekend, particularly coming off the back of that huge block of work that he's after going through with Sigerson and that. So he's obviously, you know, your key guy. So he might just wrap him in cotton wool for the first maybe 20 or 30 and then unleash him. But like, from a Donegal perspective, I suppose they have been, you watched them closely obviously against Mayo in that first day out, and they seemed to fade in the end of that game and looked a little bit leggy. Now they've got back on course again obviously, but it'd be very interesting to see. I know Michael Murphy, I think, picked up a bit of a knock in that game, so without him maybe and heading into Fitzgerald Stadium, it could be a tough ask. I'd fully expect Kerry to do a number on them there and come out with that and build momentum on, you know.
Well, hopefully we'll have a few good games anyway.
Please God, yeah.
Gaelic football in bad weather isn't often difficult.
Up the jumper,
to watch.
Mind
but
them, yeah.
Look, we'll be hopeful enough. Right, we'll always have the League of Ireland this weekend, Alan. If we don't get good Gaelic football,
don't worry,
we might get
about
good
the Gaelic
soccer
this
matches. Austin, thank you so much for coming in.
Thanks, guys.
Time for a very quick break again. Alan is staying with us. We'll be talking Premier League. Fergal Brennan will be joining us, and we also have to chat to Jane Mangan.
Game on 2FM.
With Green Farm, being flat to the mat isn't real. Our protein is. Get real with Green Farm. Real protein, real tasty.
Two. Live music on 2FM. Two.
Megan Haler, live in Dublin this summer. Inhaler are playing their biggest hometown show yet at Fairview Park, Dublin, Saturday, June 25th, with special guests, Wetleg and New Dad. Tickets available now from Ticketmaster. Inhaler, live this June. Tickets available now.
Live music on 2FM.
Yeah, welcome back. It is time to turn our attention to the Premier League. Actually, we won't go there for a minute, Alan, because I do want to mention the Pennisher Cup before we get into the Premier League and Ireland's upcoming game against Russia. So they beat Poland 2-1 on Wednesday. And since then, Vera Pauw has come out and said that she is going to... That was Thursday, actually. She's going to change the team and she's going to bring in an awful lot of the players that haven't had game time, going to try out a few new things and just give people a chance, which is quite refreshing, really. And it must be very good for the players as well involved that they know they're going to get this opportunity.
Yeah, wholesale changes, she said, that she's going to make, Marie. And I agree with her totally, because it's almost like a warm weather training camp with games included. And I know there's a trophy and it's a semi-final and you're hoping to get into the final, but this is all preparation for the bigger games to come, obviously, in the qualifying campaign. They had a good result the other night, as you say, the 1-2-1, so semi-final tomorrow. But the fact that she's making changes, and I think it's good and important that you keep the squad together, the integration amongst them all, Marie, because you're going to maybe come across injuries to a Katie McCabe, a Louise Quinn, whoever down the tracks, and you have to be certain that you can rely on bringing whoever it is next in line can do a job for you and have full confidence in doing that job as well. So she's right to do that. It's a brilliant time. I'm just actually thinking about it there. When you think of the topic at the moment is all about the weather and how bad it is here at the moment, the actual getaway and not only the games but get really good training sessions in warm weather as well for them, it's brilliant preparation for the games to come.
Absolutely. Right, you mentioned injuries there and how devastating that can be, and unfortunately there are a couple now that will be affected, that will affect the Men's Republic of Ireland team. Fergal Brennan is with us on the line. So we do know that Adam Ida is going to be out, Fergal, for the rest of the season with a knee injury, and it's a huge blow for somebody like him, not just because of the Republic of Ireland and missing him, which we hopefully won't miss him for too long, but just for himself and the fact that he's really coming into form and getting opportunities.
Yeah, and it's come at a really frustrating and a really sad point for Adam, because he's really stuck with it and waited for his chance, both for Ireland and for Norwich, and particularly for Norwich, to get into the starting team and get some starts under his belt rather than just coming on for 10 or 15 minutes here and there. He's forced his way into the starting team. I think I'm just looking at the numbers before, 5 of the last 7 Premier League games for Norwich he started. He missed the defeat to Man City last weekend because Norwich were assessing the injury and trying to decide what they were going to do. They've now made this decision to send him for surgery on a meniscus tear, which means that that's the end of the season for him. Dean Smith has said there's the potential that he could be back in training before the campaign wraps up, but there's essentially no point in risking him, particularly if Norwich are in a situation where they're potentially already relegated. But it is just so frustrating, because he said himself in a couple of interviews recently that he feels that the corner has been turned, that he's gone from being just thrown in for a little cameo here and there, that Smith has given him his chance, maybe more than Daniel Farke did when he was in charge, and then to be hit by this is so frustrating for him. But hopefully the positivity that he's gained from the start of 2022 will help him during his rehab, and he'll be hungry to get back. Whether or not he'll be fit in time for the June internationals remains to be seen, but hopefully the confidence that he's got from proving himself that he can perform in the Premier League will help him on the road to recovery.
So we also have worries about Andrew Mbamadeli. It seems that he's got a back injury, and back injuries are always a bit of a worry. They're hard to get right as well, Fergal.
Yeah, this is a slightly different situation, because he's been out for, I think, 4 or 5 weeks with this back issue that you've mentioned. And Norwich, again, are assessing their options as to what to do, whether they're to send him for surgery, whether that's necessary or not. And he's due to go and see a specialist next week to get an update on it, and Norwich will inform from there. But it's frustrating, again, and the likelihood is that even if he doesn't go for surgery, he is going to be sidelined for a period of time. And as you say, a back problem can be tricky to both treat and manage from a club perspective, from a player's perspective. So two bits of bad news. Obviously, Omar Vamadili's situation hasn't been confirmed yet, but it's also maybe a slight positive to take from it that Norwich are being so protective of them as two young players that they value highly, that they see part of their future, that they're not willing to risk them, and that they see them as being a big part of their plans for next season, whether that's somehow them surviving and staying in the Premier League or building back and putting together a championship promotion campaign.
Yeah, well, hopefully they will recover from those injuries too, just more for so for themselves, because it is very difficult when you're a young player and you do get setbacks like that. So we do wish them all the best. Alan, it is a busy weekend of football. The big game is, of course, Manchester City and Spurs, but all attention has been taken away from the football by Antonio Conte, and the reason for that is because he's been out speaking to the media. He spoke to Sky Italia and said that he thinks that the Spurs squad was weakened in the January window. Now, Spurs have asked him not to give any more interviews, so it's turned into a bit of a saga, really.
It really has, Marie, and you'd wonder how much longer Conte is going to be there, because when he's coming out doing interviews, obviously, as you say, with Sky Italia, it just creates so many problems, obviously, for the club as well. And I don't think, we always think of Daniel Levy ruling maybe not so much with an iron fist, but he's certainly a shrewd operator, as we know, and he likes to get things done his way. I think Conte is the exact same when it comes to being a manager, and I'd say there's a major clash of personality there with two massive egos, Marie. So I thought he was a brilliant appointment when he came in. He obviously got them going again. They've hit a bit of a blip in recent times as well, but I think he's just trying to point out just where they are and how far they're off, and he wants major investment in that squad. He's wanted it since he's come in. We don't know the conversations that happened prior to him coming in, whether he was given assurances that it would happen. I would have thought it would have. It didn't really happen in January for him. Obviously, he got to bring in Bentancur, and but not probably the reinforcements that he would have wanted. He got a couple out as well, which I'm sure he was happy to do. But he's suggesting that it's weakened. I think he's just trying to make a play to say, look, I need serious reinforcements here if you want him to deliver on what he wants. And that's, they're not going to win the league, but I think they should be well placed to be getting into that top four. Because when you look at all the other teams that are challenging for the top four, I would think Spurs should be in the mix as being one of the best of those. Like, Arsenal have their problems, Man United have their problems. I would think Spurs, with Conte at the helm, would be the best placed to get into that top four. But it's an average squad. It's so average. And the one thing I look at them, they're so weak defensively. I'm surprised at him as well, because even Emerson Royale, like the mistakes he makes, and he's persistent with him. I thought he would have given Doherty a chance at this stage. He brought Ben Davis back in when it looked like he was probably, his best days are behind him under Nuno, and he was on the verge of maybe finishing up maybe at Spurs. He's brought him back into the team. Dyer, I don't know how Dyer manages to get away with all the managers. They all seem to play him. So I've been a little bit surprised with Conte in that regard, but you would have to ask the question how happy he is here and how long more it's going to last with Spurs.
Well, Fergal, with that in mind and the fact that there are quite a few layers to this story, and it has been going on for quite a while, and they play Manchester City tomorrow and could very possibly get a hiding, and also there is another big job that will be coming up very, very shortly. Do you think that that's playing into what's happening here as well?
Potentially. I mean, a few dominoes would have to fall for that to work out. I'd slightly disagree with Alan in the sense of the appointment of Conte at Spurs. I think he is a brilliant manager, and he is a brilliant manager in certain situations. I just don't think he's a brilliant manager for Tottenham. And I think these interviews that have caused this controversy and Spurs fans getting annoyed, and Daniel Levy and certain members of the Spurs hierarchy being disappointed, it's no surprise this is the way Antonio Conte operates. When things are not going his way, when he doesn't have almost a copy and paste squad to deal with, that he simply has to just go in and motivate and maybe up their levels a little bit, this is the way that he reacts. We know that this is not a situation that he likes to work within. We know that he's normally a two and a half, three season manager, where he comes into proven levels of ability in the squad. And the interview last weekend was not too dissimilar, where he basically said he's used to working with players that play in the Champions League. So I would agree with Alan on the other side of it, that I don't see it lasting all that long. I think it'll last until the end of the season. There'll then be a conversation in the summer. Possibly, probably will stay around for next season. But after that, I'd be very shocked if Antonio Conte is still Spurs manager. In theory, on paper, the situation at United would lend itself to what Conte likes, this idea of proven players, international players that need someone to kind of G them up and get them moving in the right direction. But I would also say that maybe United is too much of a mess even for Conte. That is the situation that United find themselves in. All the controversy over leaks. Harry Maguire has come out today to say that Cristiano Ronaldo is not fighting him for the captaincy, and it's just a mess. And I actually think that whatever plans United have in place for the summer are constantly under review, because the candidates that they're lining up are probably looking at it and going, do I still want it, given what a mess it is? And United have to kind of look at themselves, and if they don't get top four, that will also impact who they can attract to take over from Ralf Rangnick.
I still think Conte would take the United job, even despite all the problems. I agree with Fergal, there's so many problems, but I think he would take it. But it's at the stage, Marie, now where Daniel Levy has to ask himself a question. What does he want from Spurs? He had a brilliant manager in Pochettino, and just when it looked like they were on the cusp of maybe going to that next level, he didn't back him. Then you bring in Nuno, who was a strange appointment for Spurs to take them to that next level. That was never going to happen. You nearly lost Harry Kane, your best player, for huge money, fair enough, but if you lose him, how do you replace him? And then he gets an unbelievable manager like Conte, who's one of the best in the world, and it seems that they're at loggerheads. Like, at some point, I know Fergal what he's saying about the fact that that's the way Conte operates, but if you employ him, let him get on with the job and back him. So the fact that they're at loggerheads to me seems strange. It's a question of like the power there and who'll relinquish control, whether Levy will. But at some point, Marie, if you want to get the club to where I presume he wants them to go, or the fans want them to go, and get into that top four and be there regular, you won't get a better manager than this fella. And he's going to walk now at the end of the season.
Yeah, it almost feels like he's out of plays, Daniel, because he has obviously thought that he could bring in Conte, and him being such a good manager, that he wouldn't have to spend the money, and that Conte would be able to almost just make wine out of water, really, and do something amazing. And that just hasn't happened. So now it's like, what next?
Yeah, and it kind of has happened in the sense that he did get a kick out of them, yeah. But as you're 100% right, Marie, in the fact that you can't turn bad players into great players. He's turning bad players into decent enough players. But if you want to get to the level of a Man City, Liverpool, and be in that top four regular and consistently in a Chelsea, you need better players.
Okay, let's park Spurs and move back towards Manchester United. Fergal, you mentioned what's going on with Harry Maguire and Ronaldo and the power struggle, and that Maguire had to come out and rubbish claims today, 24 hours before he has a Premier League game. He's talking about internal fighting, which is just not a good look. I think he should be focused on the job in hand, which is playing football and just getting on with things, and doing his talking on the pitch. But what's actually happening here? Like, there's so many rumours, there's so many stories. Are we ever going to get to the truth of what a Manchester United dressing room is like, and who is doing what, and who is causing all of these ructions?
I think it's fractured is the word that I would use, and I think Maguire, as you say, having to come out and make this statement on social media, they've got a massive game this weekend against Leeds. This is a huge rivalry that these two clubs have. I know obviously Leeds have been out of the Premier League for a long time prior to last season, but these are big, big rivals. The two sets of fans really, really do not get on. That's where his focus should be. But as you say, it's not. Personally, I'd say that based on the journalists that have been covering these leaks, there's too much going on that it can be complete and utter rubbish. Like, there's some really respectable journalists that have come out and said that there's at least a portion of this which is true. And I think when you look at some of the individuals that are involved in the leaks and the rumours of people not having any respect for Rangnick or his methods in training or his tactics, etc., it does ring true, because these are players that consistently have shown that whoever is in charge at Manchester United, they have a problem with them. And this stretches back almost arguably as far as David Moyes. You go then through Louis van Gaal, Jose Mourinho, Solskjaer, and now Rangnick. I know Solskjaer, is, as Alan has said many times, does have his shortcomings, but the majority of these players are the same players. They've had a problem with each manager, each coaching setup, each tactical problem that they've had. And then they've thrown Ronaldo into that mix, who is someone that does moan in these situations. Cristiano Ronaldo's eternal trump card is he scores goals that win games. We know that. We know that he can throw that down. He broke the little kind of bad streak that he had in midweek against Brighton. But ultimately, he is this type of character. You look at his body language. Against Brighton, he wasn't celebrating when they scored. He was moaning. He was throwing his hands up and down in the air. That is what you're going to get with Cristiano Ronaldo. And you need a manager that is able to kind of mould him to basically say, listen, we know the player that you are. We know what you can do. Just concentrate on that. So I would say it's kind of a case of where there's smoke, there's fire, because there's just too many convenient variables for this to be absolutely made up. And you've got players involved in here that are probably not going to be at Manchester United Football Club next season. Either they're out of contract and they'll get let go, or they'll potentially be sold. Whoever comes into Manchester United this summer could well be working with a completely different squad. And that's what's really destabilising the situation, because the players don't know where they stand. They don't know whether they're going to be there next summer. They don't know who's going to be in charge. They don't know what Rangnick's role is going to be. And all of that lack of stability is feeding into these leaks and these rumours getting sent out, because nobody really knows what's going on. Nobody involved at almost at any level of Manchester United knows where they'll be when the first ball gets kicked next season.
Well, Fergal, a colleague in a former job once said to me that the problem with rumours is that most of them are true. I regularly go back to that because he's right. Okay, Fergal, we are out of time on our football chat. Thank you so much for joining us, Alan. We'll pick this up on Monday with Ruby and yourself, and we will know the result then of the Leeds game, and I'm sure we'll have plenty to get through. Now we are headed for a break, and then Jane Mangan joins us. Now, it is the time that I know most of you have been waiting for. It is Jane Mangan time. She joins me now on the line. Jane, it is a busy weekend for racing. I know that you are going to be in Goran Park tomorrow for Red Mills Day. What can we expect from the two feature races?
You can expect small fields, but good quality. I will pull you up. Jane Mangan time. Geez, that has a ring to it, doesn't it?
It does.
The Red Mills hurdle is... Saldier, Calixios, Durazo, Tehupo, these are all horses that are probably just short of champion hurdle class, and I think some of them do have champion hurdle entries. Calixios and Tehupo met at Limerick. Tehupo came out on top, but I have a funny feeling the top horse for Rachel Blackmore and Henny Romhead could turn that form around. And in the Red Mills chases, just five declared, but interesting that Mellon, a horse that hasn't actually won since December 2019, albeit he's been second at four Cheltenham Festivals, twice in the champion hurdle. I think Mellon can finally break that duck over fences in the Red Mills chase tomorrow.
Okay, Jane, and in Navan then, what's happening there?
We're going to Navan on Sunday for the 10-up. There's the Boyne hurdle, but I think the 10-up is the most interesting, with Run Wild Fred, Beacon Edge, Farouk Delenn. There's four in there for Jiggenstown House, but Run Wild Fred is a very dour stare. Beacon Edge.